Hi, folks. This is Bob Main. I'm your host, and you're listening to another episode of today's Survival Show, where I don't go tinfoil hat on you. I just keep things rooted in common sense. Talking about strengthening your resolve and the practical things you can do to be prepared. Just an everyday guy's point of view on this show. Thanks for tuning in. I think this is episode number 138 or 39. I'm driving as usual, headed out to a business appointment. And I got to say, folks, that I do practice safe driving and safe podcasting. So don't worry about that. But I don't have the ability to check the internet and see what episode this is. But that's okay. You'll figure it out when you download it. I just want to say I'm sorry that I've been away for a while. I haven't produced a show in a few weeks. Some changes going on in my life recently. New job again. And getting prepared for a move down to the San Antonio area. As you folks know, I've been broadcasting from mainly North Texas. Sometimes I travel around. And sometimes I talk to you from the road like I'm doing right now when I'm in my vehicle. But for the most part, I've been based in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Another new job taking me down to South Texas, to the Alamo City, San Antonio, as of the 31st of July. So I'll be coming to you from South Texas most of the time. Let me give a good shout-out to some international listeners out there. Been a lot of folks sending me emails from other countries. I was just recently in another country. I just spent a week in Canada, in Montreal, Quebec, doing some training for my new job. So that had me listening to a lot of French-speaking people. Anyway, now that I'm back, I'm going to go ahead and try to put these out once a week, like I've been doing. Usually on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, you can expect a show on practical preparedness. In this show, I basically have two topics. One is talking about coping with the emotional stress and the traumatic stress again. And I did a show on this a little bit a couple of weeks ago, actually, I think about a month ago now, I did a show on coping with the trauma of the aftermath of a disaster. And so it's my goal to add to that. So actually, really, there's three topics. Let me back up. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about being the CEO of your own home. I did a show on that a few months back, and I've been having some folks that have been asking me to expand more on that. They seem to have liked that show, and I think that's a big preparedness skill that gets overlooked quite a bit. And then I've got Matt Chusnik coming back on the show for an interview, and I'll just kind of leave that topic matter as somewhat of a surprise. We'll get to that towards the end of this episode. So let me talk about being a CEO first of your own home. Would you agree with me that that's pretty much where preparedness starts? I mean, you think about it. If you grow a garden, if you buy gold and silver, if you have the attitude that you want to try to make your home as self-sufficient and off-grid living as possible, you're really taking you're taking control of your own life, are you not? You're really becoming the CEO of where you live. You know, I think anybody who's into preparedness and gets serious about it is really a business person. You're a businessman or a businesswoman, aren't you? Because you're choosing to run your home like a business. And I think if more Americans were to do that, and even to all of you who are international listeners, I guess I shouldn't just say Americans. If more people in the world would run their household and run their life like it's a business, boy, wouldn't we be better off? I mean, think how much more the economy would improve if people were not in so much debt. Do you realize that, you know, I think it's a lie that we're fed. It's a lie that we are fed, not just in this country, but all over the world, that debt is good, that people going into debt feeds the economy. Baloney. Going into debt usually means you have less spendable cash each month, all right? And therefore, you're probably not going to stimulate the economy. But that's a whole different story. That's really a financial discussion I don't want to get into in this podcast. But are you treating your home as if it were a business entity? Not just financially, but are you investing in your home and are you investing in your life? Because if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, and I'm talking to those of you who have started businesses, or even those of you who work for companies in an entrepreneurial capacity like I do, I mean, I work for a major corporation, but I pretty much run my own schedule. And I run my own business. I have a territory, and I pretty much, you know, run that territory any way I want. I spend my time any way I want. I have an expense budget that I have to stay within those parameters. And, of course, I'm expected to produce. So, really, it's kind of like being in business for myself because they leave me alone. I don't have to go to an office and report to a boss every single day and sit in a cubicle or sit in an office and do the same thing every day and have to clock in at a certain time and clock out at a certain time. I don't have to do that. So, I like this situation because it gives me the chance to be an entrepreneur without having to take most of the financial risk. And I like that. That's kind of the environment that I thrive in quite a bit. But I have to run it like a business. Well, do you do your home that way too? You see, I firmly believe that people that don't manage their priorities like that, they're the ones that get in the trouble the most. And I'm not trying to preach here. I'm not trying to tell you how to run your own life. This is a show about preparedness. This is a show about self-sufficiency or self-reliance or survival. Whatever you want to call it, whatever name you want to give it, this is about taking more of your own life into your own control. Now, as you've heard me say many times, folks, I am a man of faith. I believe that spirituality is a major, major component of survival. That's just my belief. You don't have to believe that way, and I'm not trying to impose that on you. I am a Christian, and so I believe that my Christian faith is a big part of my life. And so I do believe that God provides. I also believe that I have to do some providing myself. That's my goal. That's my solemn philosophy, folks. I have to do some providing for myself, and so does my family. And, you know, it kind of works together. And again, I'm not trying to impose my religious beliefs on you. I'm really not. I don't want this to be that kind of a show. And please don't turn this off. Please don't say, oh, man, here comes some fanatic. He's going to start preaching to me about religion. No, I'm not going to do that. But I do think you have to have your own house in order first, before anything else happens in preparedness, in getting you ready for common sense preparedness to weather the disasters. I mean, you know, let's think about it, folks. Since I last did a show, I've been away for a while. Bin Laden's been killed. Flooding in Mississippi and Louisiana has absolutely devastated people in that region. The presidential campaign, oh my God, that's heated up again here, the U.S. presidential campaign. So now we get to listen to this for another year and a half. A lot of things are happening. And surely there's more disasters to come. I think there's going to be some fallout from killing Bin Laden. I think it's a good thing that we did that. I think it's a good thing that we brought him to justice. Let me just put it that way. I fully support that, but I want you to get ready. I want you to understand that there's going to be some fallout. And especially if you happen to be a family member of a soldier overseas. Yeah, I hate to talk about this negative stuff, but I got to talk about reality on this show, folks. I really believe that there's going to be some retaliation. Not just on us here in America as citizens, but I think there's going to be some retaliation on the men and women of our military. Because it was the men of our military that took him out. So that's just kind of my personal belief. So, you know, get ready. If you're going to weather those storms of disaster, you have to have your own house in order. So I ask you a question. Since I did that podcast a few months ago called Becoming the CEO of Your Own Home, what are you working on? I'd like to hear from you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and start a thread about this on the forum. And by the way, let me extend an invitation to you to join today's Survival Show forum. Just go to www.todayssurvival.com. That's the main website where the podcast is hosted. Todayssurvival.com. You can click the forum tab, forum button. That'll get you to where you want to go. Or you can just go to todayssurvival.com/forum. Join if you're not a member. If you are a member, chime in. What have you been doing to improve your own home? There's a thread right now that's on there talking about, is your home a liability or an asset? That's a good one. A lot of differences of opinion on that. But I'm going to start another one called Becoming the CEO of Your Own Home. And I'd like to hear some success stories. I'd like to hear what it is that you're doing to improve your position as the president and chief executive president and chief executive officer of your own home. Because I believe if you don't take control of things, like if you don't take control of producing your own food, storing your own water, keeping yourself out of debt, your home and family finances, your home and family well-being, the health of your home and your family, the education of your family, if you don't take control of those things and take full control and act like, you know what, you are running a miniature corporation. You know, think about it. Your home is a miniature corporation. You and your spouse are co-CEOs of your own house. And you got a corporation. You got kids. Think of your kids, they're employees. They're employees of the home. And some people might say, boy, Bob, that's pretty extreme. No, it's not. You know what? When I was a kid, I was an employee. You know, a little background on me. When I was a kid, yes, I was my parents' son, but I was also an employee. I had to contribute. I had to do my part. I had to contribute to our house and to our household and the hobby farm that we had in Wisconsin because we were very self-sufficient when I was a kid. That's where I get a lot of this from. We raised our own beef. We raised our own pork. We raised our own chickens and our own eggs and our own poultry that we wanted to eat. You know, that, we did that, folks. That was what, you know, we believed in that. Number one, first of all, we couldn't afford to buy everything. We just didn't have much money when I was growing up. So we just learned to become more self-sufficient. We had 13 acres of land that we could work with. And folks, you can do a lot with 13 acres. When I was a kid, growing up in the late 60s and the early 70s, boy, we proved what you can do with 13 acres. You can do a lot with that kind of land. And so I was an employee. I had chores to do twice a day. And there was a lot of benefits I did not reap if I didn't do my chores. So are you running your house that way? I think that's a lost virtue, teaching kids that they have work to do, that they have to contribute. And someday, they're going to be the CEO of their own home, and they're going to have their own kids that are going to be employees. I know that might sound harsh, all right? Now, don't treat your kids like most corporations treat employees these days. Most corporations treat employees not so good. Most, not all. I happen to work for a major corporation that treats their employees terrifically. But as we know, there are major corporations that don't. So, short of treating your kids like a corporation does, don't do that. But I would say, it's just kind of my opinion, when they're young, teach them the business and the virtue of work means reward. Work means reward. So how are you doing on that? Since I last did the podcast a few months ago on that. And if you check the show notes for today's episode, what I will do is I'll put a link to that podcast if you haven't had a chance to listen to it. Because, you know, after 130-something episodes, yeah, I'd say maybe you haven't listened to every single one. I know some of you have. Some of you have said, hey, Bob, I'm finally caught up now. Matt Chusnick just sent me an email. He's going to be on the show here a little bit later. He just sent me an email saying that he just got caught up on all of my podcasts. And that's that's amazing. It's quite flattering, folks. I appreciate that very much. Okay. So let's dive right into one of the main topics that I wanted to cover, and that's common reactions to trauma and disaster. And I bet there's some people in Mississippi and Louisiana, with all the flooding that's going on, are probably going to experience some of these types of reactions as well. Now, this is a little bit, I'm going to start with a brief review of a recent podcast, and then I'm going to get into expanding on everything a little bit more in depth. Okay, but first is shock and disbelief. Usually whenever somebody's involved in some type of a disaster, and it doesn't have to be a natural weather disaster either. It could be a family tragedy. You know, the stink hits the fan, folks, every day for somebody. Do you realize that every day somebody loses their job or a family member becomes terribly sick? or unfortunately a family member passes away. And for a lot of people, that's a tragedy. That's a tragedy in and of itself. Even though it only happens to them, it's a disaster. A major medical illness can sometimes force people into bankruptcy if they're not properly insured. Okay, so disasters, and you know, shock and disbelief sets in as well. And you may have a hard time accepting the reality of what has happened. And that's the challenge is, you know what, people go, I can't believe this is happening. How many times have you watched a news report and people say, I didn't think this could ever happen to me. Next is fear. Fear that the same thing is going to happen again or you'll lose control. Fear. You know what, folks, for many years I worked in the home security industry, a home and business security industry. You know, telling people, you know, basically selling components, selling alarm components, and also more than just equipment, I would also get people convinced on what they had to do to secure their property, because there's a state of mind that you need to have also to be able to secure your property. But a lot of times after people have been broken into, after their homes have been invaded, or after somebody has kicked their door in and taken their stuff, all of a sudden now they experience fear. They're afraid because the same thing may happen again, and it often does. Do you realize that most burglars, the vast majority, if they're successful the first time breaking into your home, they're going to try it again. Just think about that. Sadness. Sadness is an emotion that takes place, you know, particularly if you know people who died in the tragedy. And then helplessness. The sudden, unpredictable nature of natural disasters and accidents might leave you with a feeling of helplessness, that there's nothing you can do. And then guilt sets in. You know, and here's when guilt sets in if there's a disaster. And you know what? And folks, I hope this never happens to you. Really, I do. You know, this is a tough show for me to do sometimes because I have to talk about negative stuff and I'm a real positive guy. And it's hard to talk about negative things like disasters, okay? But I try to put a positive spin on disasters as much as I can. And I believe that if I can do my part just to help you think about something that is going to help you mitigate the problems that come from a disaster, then that's positive, right? But this next one, this next feeling of guilt, like for example, if you survive and other people died in the tragedy, guilt will set in. You know, you start thinking that maybe you could have done more to help prevent this situation. And then after guilt, anger. People get real angry after a disaster, right? They might be angry at God or others that they feel that are responsible. Or they might be angry if it's a man-made disaster. Or angry at the people who made it happen. You know, surely some of the people in Louisiana right now, after they opened up that spillway and they started letting some of the overflow from the flooded Mississippi out into the plains and the farmlands of Louisiana, they did that in order to save Baton Rouge and New Orleans from total chaos. All right, if those floodwaters would have hit Baton Rouge in Louisiana, it probably would have been a disaster worse than Hurricane Katrina. But you know what? There's going to be some angry people on the countryside of Louisiana, aren't there? There's going to be some angry people because it's man-made. They're going to say, well, I can't believe that they sent that water and wiped out our town and wiped out my land. They're going to be angry. That's a natural reaction. Next is shame. People experience shame after a traumatic event, especially over feelings and fears that are out of their control. And then relief. Relief is last. Relief typically sets in. You might feel relieved that the worst is over. And truly, in every disaster, there does come a point where, okay, the worst is now over. It's done. Now you can begin the recovery process. And you might feel relieved at that point and even hopeful that your life is going to return to normal. And that's the key. The quicker you can get your life returning to normal, the better off you're going to be. And so that leads me into the next subject that I want to talk about before I bring on Matt Chusnik. Let me give you the first tip in bringing your life back to normal. Seek comfort and support. Okay, natural disasters or other traumatic events can turn your world upside down quickly, and they just shatter your sense of safety and well-being. and being proactive about yours and your family's situation and well-being, rather than just passively waiting for somebody to come by and help you out. Focus on things that are going to help you feel more calm and more centered. Okay? And seek comfort and support. Don't be afraid to seek the counsel and the comfort and the support of others. I don't like people to take the Lone Ranger attitude. If I'm in a disaster, they go, if something happens to me and my family, we're going to be okay. We don't need anybody else. I don't believe that, folks. I don't believe that you don't need anybody else. Human beings are social creatures. You need that social interaction. So seek the comfort and support of others. Reestablish your routine. Okay? There's comfort in familiarity. Doing things that are familiar to you to reestablish your routine, there's comfort in that level of familiarity. Okay, that's a tough word for me. In other words, what I'm trying to say is after a disaster, get back as much normalcy as you can in your life. Do things to keep your mind occupied, like read a book. That's why, you know, storing good books to read it's very vital. After some kind of a disaster, that can start helping you regain some of the normalcy. Watching a movie or something, or do some cooking, or playing with your kids, stuff like that. The quicker you can get to that stuff after a disaster, I think the better you are. Because then you're not dedicating your mind, you're not dedicating your attention to the traumatic event that just happened to you. Connecting with others is so important. You might be tempted to withdraw from people. You know, and you know, there's an old philosophy that my old mentor Tom Hopkins taught me, comfort zone and danger zone. I've talked about this a little bit before, but most people, they're living in their comfort zone, right? But here's what happens. When a tragedy happens, all of a sudden they're pushed from their comfort zone to their danger zone. All of a sudden now they're in their mental danger zone. You know what happens to people? When people get in their danger zone, they do one of two things. They either withdraw or they get hostile. I'll say that again. When people are pushed out of their comfort zone into their danger zone, they withdraw or get hostile. And unfortunately, they get hostile, a lot of them do, after a tragedy. And this is where you got to have yourself protected. This is where you got to protect yourself. And you got to be ready. You got to be ready for the people. It's not funny. I don't know why I'm chuckling right now. Boy, that's weird. You have to be ready for the hostile people. Because all of a sudden they've been pushed into their comfort zone. A tragedy has happened. They don't know how to react to it. They've been pushed into their danger zone. They don't know how to react to it, so they're getting hostile. Or they withdraw. And they withdraw from social activities and they avoid others after some kind of a traumatic event. Don't do that. Spend time with loved ones. The other thing is connect with other survivors. One of the things you can do if you are unfortunately involved in some kind of a disaster is make a connection with other people who just survived the same thing you survived. Tell stories. Tell stories about what you did. Focus on the positives. Focus on the positives. What went right? See, think about what went right. In every disaster, I believe there's something that goes right. That may sound strange. You might think, boy, Bob, you're off. You're weird now. No, I'm not weird. There's something that goes right in every disaster. Somebody learns something. Somebody does something they never thought was possible. Somebody does something almost superhuman that they never thought or nobody else ever thought was possible to do. Connect with those people. Learn from them. Talk about it. And focus on the positives. That helps the healing process. Now, something I've never heard talked much about on a survival podcast or a survival show or a survival blog is after a disaster, I think it's important to start participating in memorials and events and rituals that kind of help you through the grieving process, through the mourning process, because there's a natural tendency to grieve and to mourn. And, you know, you might think, I don't want to go to that. I want to stay away from all that stuff. That's negative. Well, every once in a while, you have to allow your emotions to heal. And a memorial or some kind of a recognition event after some kind of a tragedy is key. You know, if you think back to September 11th, you remember all the firefighters celebrating? And they were celebrating about the people that they rescued, and they had events and they had memorials to remember the people that perished on September 11th. You remember that? Shortly after September 11th, there were all kinds of grieving events and memorial events that people went to grieve the loss. That's necessary for healing. They also went to events to celebrate some of the heroic efforts of some of the firefighters and the policemen that risked their lives on September 11th, and they saved other lives. And they also went to memorials of firefighters and police officers that were lost in the line of duty trying to save others. All that, folks, is part of the healing process. And here it is 10 years later almost, and we're still healing from it, aren't we? Okay, now the last tip that I want to share with you in the aftermath or how to deal with some kind of a tragedy is minimize your media exposure. The media is going to be all over you and the whole event like a bunch of ants. You know, because that's what they do. You know, after a traumatic event or a disaster, I think it's important to protect yourself and protect your loved ones from the unnecessary trauma and reminders any more than you have to. Now, I know I just got done saying go through the grieving process and go through the memorial events and go through all the celebrations and things. Yes, you know, that's enough. That's going to remind you enough of the disaster. Don't let the media do it. And what I mean by that is don't watch the news just before you go to bed. You know, don't listen to the news rehash all the negative stuff that happened during the tragedy and during the event. You don't need to relive it. If you just went through it, you don't need to relive it, do you? Okay, I mean, it's healthy to gather information, but try to avoid the morbid preoccupation with the distressing images and the distressing videos and pictures that the media is going to plaster all over the place. I would suggest also protecting your kids from seeing or hearing unnecessary reminders of the disaster. That's key. And after viewing disaster coverage, talk with your loved ones about the footage of it and what you're feeling. If you do happen to see or engage in some of the reminders, some of the media footage that reminds you of it. But I would say as a general, just try to avoid that as much as possible. Because, you know what, the media wants to increase their ratings, they want to sell. I know that they have a job to report, but some of them over-sensationalize events, right? We know that about the media, don't we? And this is not a political statement at all. I'm just saying that the media has a tendency to way over-sensationalize and exaggerate, and you just don't need that. If you went through the disaster, look, you know what you went through. Right? You know how bad it was. Would you agree with me on that? You don't need to be reminded, do you? And if they're asking you for an interview, be real selective about what interviews you give to media. You know, what you might want to do is I heard Joe Zamudio talk about this. Joe Zamudio was the guy, one of the guys that was at the tragic shooting of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. In Tucson earlier this year. He was actually, Joe Zamudio was the one guy that was carrying a gun that never used it. He was very responsible with it. He never used it, but he showed up on the scene to help subdue Jared Loughner. And I heard Joe Zamudio giving an interview on the Pro Arms podcast recently. And one of the things that struck me about his interview was he was talking about media interviews after that tragic event. He was barraged by people requesting to interview him because he was on the scene. And he said, had I had it to do all over again, I would do one interview and one interview only, and I would make it an exclusive interview with just one media outlet and one media person. And I would make it exclusive. And he said the reason being is because if you tell a reporter that you want to give them an exclusive interview, all the other reporters leave you alone and you can do your interview just one time. And I kind of agree with that. You know, if you're going to be volunteer to be interviewed after a tragic event, do it once and once only. so that you can prepare yourself mentally for it, say what you want to say, get the message out, talk about it one time and be done with it. You don't need reporters sticking microphones in your face 15 times a day reminding you about everything. Okay, you're going to be stressed out enough after the event, right? Do you need more stress of people sticking microphones and cameras in your face? I don't think so. So I would urge you to listen to that. Recently, the Pro Arms podcast. Just search iTunes for the Pro Arms podcast or do a Google search. They recently, it's one of the more recent episodes that they have. It's an interview with Joe Zamudio. Very good one. You need to listen to that. I would highly recommend that. I'll see if I can put a link in the show notes for this episode to that podcast, okay? Okay, now there is one more subject I want to cover real quick on the aftermath. I thought that the last one was the end of it, but I'm looking at my show notes here, and there's something I forgot, and I really don't want to forget this, and that's tips in helping your kids heal after a disaster. For those of you raising families, you know, folks, I'm a very family-oriented person. I like for this podcast to be very family-oriented. That's why I don't swear on this podcast like you hear on other shows. You know, that's why I try not to get real graphic and real explicit on this show, because I want this to be a family-oriented show. And so there's some tips for helping kids heal after a disaster. The first thing I want to share with you is provide your kids with ongoing opportunities to talk about what they went through and to ask questions and express their concerns. Okay? Because kids, you know what? They need to get that out. You know, don't think that your kids are not going through the same emotions that you are, because they are. But they may have questions. They're only kids. And they look to adults and they look to parents and relatives to help them answer their questions. And give them honest answers. I believe in being honest with kids. If something bad's happening, tell them that. Don't shelter them. I mean, you know, kids sometimes, folks, are much more perceptive than you think they are. If something bad's going on, they know it. Don't lie. And if you don't know the answer to one of your kids' questions, don't be afraid to admit it. Okay? Don't jeopardize your child's trust by lying to them. Just say, hey, you know what? Son, daughter, I don't know that. I don't know the answer. But I tell you what I'm going to do is we're going to find out the answer to that, okay? Disaster or not, I do that with my son all the time. I'm not afraid to tell my son I don't know something, because I don't. Okay, so and one more thing I want to say here. I kind of had a little bit of an interruption there. I just got a phone call. It was a business phone call. Business first, folks. While I'm doing this show, I'm doing this during business hours, so I got to take care of my business first. After all, as I mentioned earlier, I am the CEO of my own life and my own house, so business comes first. Not that you guys aren't important. I do this show because I consider you guys are my friends, and I do this because I love it, and this is a fun time. This is a hobby. It's not my full-time job. It's just something that I do on the side. So business comes first. But the very last thing I do want to cover here about the aftermath of a disaster is watch for some physical signs of stress. Your kids sometimes may show some physical signs. You know, stomach pains, sleep disturbances, disorientation, stuff like that, difficulty speaking. Those are physical signs that they're just stressed out. And, I think if you can just help kids remain calm, that's the most important thing. Help them remain calm, answer their questions, reassure them. They're going to look to you as parents for reassurance. And what does that mean? That means you got to be strong too. That means that you're going to have to step up to the plate and be strong and be there for your kids. It's tough, folks, but nobody ever said raising kids is easy, either before disasters or after disasters. Nobody said that raising kids is easy. But it sure is rewarding, isn't it? Isn't it great? It's fun. I wouldn't have it any other way, folks. I just simply wouldn't. Okay, so I hope you've gained some ideas from that on what to do if a disaster happens, how to handle it. And maybe you've gotten some ideas from that that'll help you prepare a little bit more so that if that tragic time comes, and I sure hope it doesn't, that you're ready. That you're ready, that you can strengthen your resolve, as I like to talk about. You know, and I like to mention that Teddy Roosevelt says, do what you can with what you have, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. And see, I think you'll have more if you start taking the steps right now to do some of the things that I've just talked about here in the first half of this show. So we're going to take a quick break. This is not the end of the show by any means. I got Matt Chusnick coming on to do an interview. And he was the guy that was on several weeks back talking about knife sharpening and blacksmithing and so forth. And we're going to talk about some other subjects I think you'll find interesting here in a minute. So there is going to be just a quick break. Before I let you go, I want to go ahead and give out the website address one more time, www.todayssurvival.com. Join our forum. And by the way, don't forget about my Survival Champions Club. Would you like to be a champion? I believe a champion is someone that's the best at what they do, someone that excels at what they do. And I've put together a special podcast with a lot of information never covered before on this show. It would be your way to get some extra info and to help support my show. You know, it'll help support me and my efforts and keep everything going. There are some expenses and so forth, and it helps me with dedicating my time and so forth. It's only $15 for a podcast a little over 2 hours long that you can start and stop and listen to at your leisure. If you just go to the main site, todayssurvival.com, you'll see a button there that says, you'll see a subject up at the top of the webpage that says Survival Champions Club Podcast. Click there, you'll be able to see what kind of information is on there, and it's an easy way. Just hit the Buy Now button. It's only $15, and I will email you a link to download the show. Many of you have already invested in it. Version number 3 will be coming up probably in July. But version number 2 is up and ready right now. All right, so again, I don't want this show to be too commercial. I will just leave it at that. Quick break, and I'll be back on with Matt Chusnick. Don't go away. Okay, folks, back with you for segment number 2, but I've changed my mind. The interview with Matt Chusnick is going to be the next show. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to post that 2 or 3 days from the time you hear this one. So you're going to probably get 2 shows this week. One right now and one a little bit later on this week, and I'll have Matt Chusnick on, and that'll be a show all by itself. I got a lot of things I want to talk to him about, and I think he's got some things on his mind that he wants to bring up to help us all prepare some more. So I thought that if I go ahead and put him on this show, it would make this way too long, and I don't want to do that. So I have some other ideas here that I want to share with you, and then Matt will be on in a few days. So I'm still in my car. I want to tell you about a preparation I just did here. And, you know, as springtime comes, it's important that we start to adjust some of our preparations accordingly. And one of the preps that I believe in is a lot of training. And if you remember earlier this year, I said I had some training goals in mind. I like to train my brain. I like to invest in myself. I believe that I'm the greatest asset I have. I believe that what I know how to do is just as important or even more important than the supplies that I possess. And so I'm going to experience in a couple of weeks the first training goal that I had for my survival preps, and that is a 2-day defensive shooting class. I just stopped at Academy Sports and Outdoors, real nice store that we have here for outdoors equipment here in the North Texas and Dallas area. Actually, all over Texas. I don't know if you have them where you live, but I like shopping at Academy because their prices are pretty good. I just bought 1,150 rounds of 9mm ammunition. 115 grain 9mm Monarch brand, made in Serbia. And you know, it's good practice ammo. It's strictly practice, nothing I would consider carrying as a defensive ammo, but it burns fairly clean in my guns, and I'm taking a 2-day training class. 800 rounds in 2 days. It's called Close Range Gunfighting by Suarez International. It teaches you how to fight to defend yourself. And you might be into firearms, and you might not be into firearms. You know, this show, today's survival show, is not all about guns. Not by any stretch of the imagination. As most of you know, I do another show that's gun-related called the Handgun World Show, and it's on the Gun Rights Radio Network. So check that out if you want to hear all about guns, guns, guns. But this is one of the preps, and it's springtime. I like to take these courses in the spring and in the fall. I have another one I'm going to take in the fall. I'm probably going to take a first aid course sometime during the summer because the one that I'm looking at is primarily indoors. It's a first responder class that the county is putting on, although I might wait until after I move to take that one, so I may find a school down in the San Antonio area. Help me out. Some of you who are listening from the Austin, San Antonio area, if you know some good first aid courses down there or first responder courses, might even just take a Red Cross course. I'm not quite sure yet. You know, that's what my goal for this summer. And then somewhere in October, I'm going to take another shooting class. But whatever it is that you like to do, and whatever you consider you need help in preparations, go ahead and take a class on it. And spring and summer is the good time to do that, I believe, you know, without school activities. For those of you who raise kids, like me, the school year can really keep you busy as a parent, can't it? If you have grown kids, I guess it's not much of a problem. But if you have younger kids that are still in school, you know, it seems like we got to schedule these things in the summertime. Because if we don't, we just never have time. And, you know, my business in what I do now, I'm primarily calling on hospitality and hotels. So my business is more a lot of prospecting during the summer. You know, most hotels, hospitality establishments, a lot of them get real busy during the summer because of vacationers. Sometimes it's harder to hit the managers and harder to meet with the managers, I meant to say. Some of them don't want to give a salesperson the time. So what I do is I do a lot of prospecting. You know, I do a lot of stopping in and finding out what the needs of a property might be so that, you know, when the vacationers go away later in the fall and I can get more of their time, at least I know I have a pretty good idea what they're going to need when they're ready to do their upgrade or when they're ready to do their construction. So I guess where I'm going with this, not to get off on a tangent about my work, is I've got a little bit more time to take courses and things like this. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm dedicating this spring and this summer to improving my skills. I'd like to urge you to do the same, as well as it's time to, if you haven't done this already, I guess it'd be a time to go through your bug-out bag and take out all the winter items and put in more spring and summer related items. Like, for example, I don't think there's any reason for me to carry winter coats in my car anymore. I was doing that over the winter. You know, at least a couple of warm coats and blankets and sleeping bags and stuff. I think it's now time for me to put more spring and summer related items in my car and in my 72-hour emergency kit and in my vehicle emergency kit. As you know, I separate the two. My bug-out bag at home, which is basically a 72-hour emergency kit. I don't like to call it a bug-out bag, really. I'm going to be bugging in if I can. That's going to be my first choice. I don't want to bug out if I don't have to. I think that's foolish. I think it's foolish to bug out unless you absolutely have to. Now, if you're being asked to evacuate, like some people are in Louisiana right now, well, of course you're going to bug out. But if there's some kind of a disaster and I can stay in, I'm going to stay in and use all the supplies and the comforts that I have at home. But in case I do, I've got 72 hours worth of supplies. But I think it's time now to think about more of the warmer weather related items. I still need to have shelter, food, water, fire, stuff like that if I have to leave. And in my vehicle emergency kit, I've pretty much got 24 hours worth of supplies. Because the way I figure it is if I'm traveling around, my vehicle breaks down, I can probably get help within 24 hours. And I've got some defensive tools in my vehicle, of course, in case something happens to me when I'm out on the road and some people decide they want to mess around with me a little bit. I'll be prepared for that. Hope it doesn't happen, but that's the world that we live in today, is it not? So let me urge you to go ahead and change out those emergency kits and evacuation bags or bug-out bags, whatever you want to call them. If you haven't started your gardens yet, now's the time. You can still do it. It's not too late. There's some things you can plant that are, you know, and I'm not a gardening expert, folks. A lot of good gardeners on our forum. Check that out. You know, but I do remember a lot, and I've got a little small garden myself, more of a container garden and things like that. And we don't grow anywhere near enough to feed us. But it's a little bit, and every little bit helps. You know, every trip that we can avoid to the grocery store is just that much more money we keep in our pocket. You know, let's put it that way. It all adds up, folks. A few bucks here and a few bucks there. You'd be amazed how that adds up. So it's not too late for that. Also, spring cleaning. You know, this is a preparation. I really believe in organization, and this is a preparation often neglected. And I want to remind you on that as well. You know, spring cleaning, spring decluttering. It seems to be a good time to do it because it's easy to have a yard sale. Folks, I've made a lot of money lately on Craigslist. You know, my wife and I are decluttering. It's just amazing how much stuff we have. Just too much. It's actually depressing. My wife and I were getting a little depressed the other day about how much stuff we have that we don't need. And, of course, you know, we're getting prepared for a move. And one of the positive things of moving, have you ever noticed this? It forces you to get rid of a lot of stuff that you've been hanging on to that you don't need. And we're realizing how much we have and that we don't need. So I've been making some money on Craigslist selling some stuff. And, you know, hey, when you can take an item that you don't need that somebody else really could use and you can make some money on it, I mean, it's like pure profit, isn't it? I mean, think about it. And some of the things that we're selling are gifts that were given to our family that we just don't use anymore. And, you know, it's real easy to look at something and go, oh, you know, that's got sentimental value. So-and-so from my family gave it to me. I believe in keeping a few good things that family members gave to you. You know, if your parents or your grandparents gave you a few nice things, don't go selling those off if they have sentimental value. But we can't keep, for me and my family at least, I don't know about you, we can't keep every single gift that was ever given to us, especially if we're not using it. I mean, over the years, we've received so much stuff, and that's why we have too much. And rather than pay somebody to move it or to help us move it, if we're not using it, I either eBay it or Craigslist it and make some extra cash. So, you know, the last couple months, put about an extra $600 in our family emergency fund, just getting rid of stuff we don't need. So you might want to think about that. Go through your stores. I'm not talking about your preparations. Don't go selling those off. You need them. You know, I mean, stored food's like money in the bank, isn't it? Stored water is like money in the bank. Gold and silver right now, definitely money in the bank. So don't be selling that off. That's not what I'm talking about. But just go through your stuff. I don't live in your house. I can't tell, but you would be amazed how many people are just cluttered up. And I was one of them. I'm going to throw my hand up in the air and say, that's us. So we got about 2.5 months yet to get rid of some more stuff. Springtime's a good time to do it because if you're going to have a yard sale, now's the time. Weather's getting warmer. People are getting out more, especially those of you who live up north in some of the colder climates. Your colder climates are turning warmer. So now's a good time. Catch the people while they're out and about looking for stuff and make some money. Make some money. You know, one of the things that Dave Ramsey says is you should have $1,000 at least in your emergency fund. $1,000. And some people say, well, I don't have $1,000. Yeah, you do. Go through your stuff. See what it is you can sell. I've made probably pretty close to $600. I haven't done an accurate count. It's probably closer to $600 right now in the last month and a half. Selling junk we don't need. You'd be amazed how you can scrounge up money when you really need to. And what's more important, stuff sitting around your homestead that you don't use, or $600 or $700 added to your emergency fund? Which one of those is more important? Think about it. You might even take that $600 that you make on selling your stuff and buy some preparations. Buy some more dehydrated foods and store them. Or buy a more sophisticated way to store some water. Or just buy some large bottles of water. Buy some large 2-liter bottles of water and add to your food stores and so forth. And maybe go out and get that new bug out bag that you've been wanting to put together. There's all kinds of things. Or do like I do and take part of that money and buy the ammo that I need for a 2-day class coming up. All sorts of things. A lot of it's just a matter of reprioritizing, and springtime's a good time to do that. I don't know what it is about the spring. It just seems like it's a good time. You know, the fall is my second favorite time to start doing some decluttering because even though in Texas we don't have brutal winters, we still have winters. And things, you know, take on a different tone during the winter. It's not as easy in Texas to have a yard sale during the winter. And even though we have warmer winters than a lot of people, you do have to prepare differently in the winter. It seems to take on a different feel. So take some time here during the spring and early summer to do that. And so, with all that being said, I think this is a good time to bring this episode to a close. Again, stay tuned in a few days. Check your feeds, check iTunes, and so forth. I'll have another interview with Matt Chesnick coming up, and we'll talk about some pretty cool stuff. But for now, my name is Bob Main, and you've just listened to another episode of Today's Survival Show. It's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. Remember the words of Teddy Roosevelt: do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'll catch you again in just a couple minutes.
Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy.